Amy, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Helen Jarvie with the Center for Ecology and Hydrology in Wallingford, UK, and Kevin King with the Soil Drainage Research Unit. So, as you know, the Great Lakes account for about 21% of the world's freshwater supply and 84% here in North America. A lot of the work that I've worked with Kevin on is in Lake Erie, which is the smallest of the Great Lakes by volume. Accounts for about $8.5 billion worth of revenue annually in both tourism and trade. A gentleman by the name of Jeff Reuter from Ohio State University came up with something called the 50 and 2 rule. So Lake Superior has about 50% of the water, but only produces about 2% of the fish, whereas Lake Erie only has about 2% of the water and produces about 50% of the fish. And in the last 15 years or so, we've seen the commercial charter boats on Lake Erie dwindle from about 1,200 to where now it's less than 800. So here's a famous shot of Lake Erie in the 2011 algal bloom. And these are being caused by roughly about 1 to 1.5 kilogram of phosphorus per hectare. On a dissolved phosphorus, it's between a quarter and a third of a kilogram per hectare per year. So we saw in some of the earlier presentations losses from fields of 10 to 15 to 20 kilograms per hectare per year. So we're not talking about very much phosphorus coming into the lake at all. These algae blooms are releasing some very, very toxic stuff. You see in red there four of the algal toxins that are released during some of these blooms. And at the top, that might be kind of hard to see, but that's dioxin. So of the toxins that we know of, four of the top seven are algal toxins. 2014, this led to a public health crisis when for about 2 or 3 days, the city of Toledo said, do not touch, do not drink, do not think about our water. Huge public health crisis during that first weekend of August in 14. We know that about 70% of the phosphorus loading comes from tributaries. That 52% is what Heidelberg University monitors, and then there are other tributaries that they don't monitor. Through that monitoring program, which is a great wealth of information, we know that the total phosphorus loading there on the left has declined, both due to implementation of point sources as well as great efforts with non-point source losses. And we've also seen an initial decrease in the soluble phosphorus loading here on the right. It depends on what model you're using, but these kind of reached a minimum somewhere between 1995 and 2002, and they've started to increase again. So Kevin and a few others put together a paper asking, you know, what are causing these harmful nuisance algae blooms in Lake Erie? They came up with a list of about 26 different things, and one of alphabetically, one of the first things that came up was the Clean Air Act, which has been floated by a few people, including a top crop consultant in the area that has mentioned some things about soil pH increasing and a few other things. So let's take a step back. Continentally, we've seen a shift in total phosphorus concentrations in our streams and rivers. So this is a paper that was put out this year in Environmental Science and Technology, and you can see that line is shifting towards the right of increasing phosphorus concentrations. And whenever we look at this on the U.S. map, you can see lakes and streams are increasing in their concentration, and many of these are in pristine systems. Now, they did not measure soluble phosphorus in these systems, They just measure total phosphorus. And these changes are quite small. I think that the units there are in micrograms per liter. Some of these high hot spots are, 4 or 5 micrograms per liter, which is not a great deal, but it is a trend of increasing phosphorus. Looking at some other research, so this is how sulfate in precipitation impacts the dissolved organic carbon. So as you decrease the sulfate in the precipitation, you tend to get higher DOC. Here's another study. At the top here, you see declining sulfate concentrations in the precipitation. The precipitation also shows an increasing trend for pH, and there's a concomitant increase in the dissolved organic carbon concentration there. So what does this really mean? So the National Atmospheric Deposition Program has a site that's located in Huntington, Indiana, which is right at kind of the mouth or the top end of the Maumee River. And over about a 21-year period, there's been almost a full unit increase in pH. Sulfate has decreased by more than half. Nitrate in the precipitation has decreased by almost half. We did some soil extractions with precipitation chemistry mimicking that of 1990 and 2011 on a group of 8 soils from Indiana and Ohio. In 5 of the 8 soils, we saw significant increases whenever we did extractions with precipitation from 2011 when we compared it to the mimicked precipitation from 1990. In only one case was the opposite true, where the more acidic rainwater produced more dissolved phosphorus from the soils. Looking at fertilizers, we know that one of the things that's happened in recent years, in the last 30 years or so, is a switch from triple superphosphate to MAP or DAP. So we also did this for MAP, DAP, triple superphosphate, and a few other fertilizers. And with this, we saw increases in the soluble phosphorus from all the fertilizers except for rock phosphate. So this is not to say this is exactly what's happening, but maybe just in the millisecond when a raindrop hits the surface of the soil or the surface of a fertilizer prill, we maybe have moved from an area of very low phosphorus availability to somewhat higher phosphorus bioavailability. So this isn't definitive. This is just kind of a conceptual idea of what we may be seeing. Now this session is on growing season and non-growing season losses. So we took that NADP data for, here we have the precipitation pH, and we broke it down by the non-growing season in the region, which is basically October through March, versus the growing season, which would be crops in this region are typically planted on tax day, so April through September. And you can see in the 90s, there's no real difference in the precipitation pH between the seasons. As you move into the 2000s, you do get a little bit higher precipitation pH during the growing season, and that continued into this decade. Looking at the total phosphorus that's in the Maumee River, in the 90s, there's no real difference in the total phosphorus concentrations over the same period. There is a little bit of an increase in the non-growing season total phosphorus concentrations for both the 2000s and the 2010. But when we regress the Maumee River total phosphorus concentrations against precipitation pH, we get kind of a declining trend there. So which is kind of consistent with what we've seen over time, is a bit of a continued decline in the total phosphorus concentrations. However, when we look at the soluble phosphorus concentrations, in the 90s, we saw about a 10% difference between the growing season and non-growing season soluble phosphorus concentrations in the Maumee. But this jumped up to about a 50% increase in the non-growing season during the 2000s, and about a 40% increase when we compare the non-growing season to the growing season during this decade. When we regress those against the precipitation pH during the growing season, that trend is significant. I didn't put all that up there to jumble everything up, but the slope during the non-growing season is higher than during the growing season. A couple of different initial thoughts here is that during the growing season, not only are the crops growing in the fields, but you also get the periphyton and the ceston and the macrophytes growing in the streams that are going to be able to uptake this readily available phosphorus as that water moves through the stream continuum. So it's possible that what we're seeing is there in the black, we aren't seeing as much of an effect because we are seeing biotic uptake during the growing season, but this is not reflected during the non-growing season. This is the soluble reactive phosphorus to total phosphorus ratio. And here again, we have two significant trends. During the non-growing season, the divergent pattern is exacerbated by the concomitantly with the precipitation pH. So in conclusion, the increased precipitation pH, the decreased sulfate concentrations in the precipitation has occurred at the same time as the Maumee River soluble reactive phosphorus increases. Through some soil extracts, we see that there may be differences in how the precipitation interacts with soils and fertilizers. But we also know that many other factors have changed over this exact same period. So we cannot confirm that precipitation chemistry is impacting these losses, but I don't think we can exclude it from the realm of possibilities either. So, thank you. Right. So Helen Jarvie and I we've had some preliminary discussions about some of these different things, and she's a brilliant hydrochemist, way, way smarter than I am. So I'm sure she has some ideas. And it's a real quandary, because we've had so many changes in the entire system that have occurred simultaneously, and I don't know how to answer that. We do know that there are certainly other factors that have played a role. So how to tease out the individual pieces, I don't know.
The real challenge in this is differentiating between correlation, which this is based on, and causality and what's actually going on.
Right.
And I noticed that there's a lot of variability in the harder, and the salt base was diluted more, so those sites we achieved more salt phosphorus because we had more movement off the land. Is it related to something wholly other than rainwater chemistry that more due to rainwater fall?
That's a really good question. We have not done that yet, but I think that's in the cards to do. It's going to take us some time to look into that further. Okay, we got to cut a question.